Welcome to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, president of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Stay tuned for an analysis and conversation about the issues that matter most to you and your family. Here now with this week's edition of News in Focus is Chris Long.
And good evening and welcome to this edition of News in Focus. We're glad that you've joined us. We're going to be talking about the Bring America Back to Life convention coming to Cleveland on March 10th and 11th, and we're going to have the director of Cleveland Right to Life give us the rundown and all that will be taking place at that wonderful event. Also, we'll be talking in the second part of the hour to Nathan Colosio. He is with the Chaldean Christian Community of Greater Detroit. I've had Nathan on in the past. He has a special school that actually helps to teach and train young people that come in as refugees to this country from the Middle East and basically who have been in refugee camps, who have fallen behind on their studies, and he has a wonderful program for that. And actually, we're going to talk about Iraq. We're going to talk about the progress that is being made against ISIS, the Islamic State, and the retake of Mosul. You will know that back in 2014, August of that year, ISIS invaded northern Iraq, took the capital city of Mosul, along with the Capital Bank and the armory of weaponry that the U.S. Forces left to the Iraqi army. And unfortunately, they abandoned their weapons, left the city, left ISIS in control. And of course, you know the rest of the terrible atrocities that took place as a result of the Islamic State announcing a caliphate against Christians, Jews, and non-Muslims. We're going to talk with Nathan about a progress report for the refugees in the Kurdish territory and the progress on the ground to retake Mosul. So there is some good news finally in that region, and we hope to hear some wonderful things from Nathan. But I want to share with you an exciting event this Saturday I'll be at, and that is the new group, which is called Main Street Patriots, will be hosting an event at the 9th Street Pier, also known as Voinovich Bicentennial Park, and that will be at 12:30. There'll be a number of speakers, and this is basically talking about and rallying behind the cause of what Mr. Trump is doing as he is now our new president and the agenda that he's bringing. We, of course, heard the president's speech the other night at a joint session of Congress. We don't call it a State of the State address. That will be next year after he's served in office for a full year. He doesn't even have his full complement of his cabinet yet that have been confirmed to their various offices because of the process in Washington takes some time. And there are some people that are actually creating some difficulty for some of the nominees, unfortunately. But nevertheless, we're going to talk about that and rally, as it were, on Saturday at 12:30 at the 9th Street Pier in downtown Cleveland. Come on out and join us. It'll be a great time with fellow patriots. Without further ado, let's invite our first guest, Molly Smith, who is the director of Cleveland Right to Life. And, of course, we're going to talk about the Bringing America Back to Life convention that is coming March 10th and 11th. Molly, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Chris, for having me on. This is a wonderful opportunity to talk about what we are going to be doing. And you know, as you're prepping all the for the rest of the show, it's interesting to see how much of what we all do intersects on the whole life issue. So I'm thrilled to be able to join you to talk about this.
Well, thank you. And of course, how many times, I was going to say, what is this annual Bringing America Back to Life? Because you've been doing this for a handful of years now. How many have we had?
Yes, this is going to be our eighth annual Bringing America Back to Life. It's a two-day event. It starts on Friday, March the 10th, continues all day, starts in the morning with a breakfast, lunch, then a gala dinner in the evening. And then, of course, we start again on Saturday morning, same time, 7 o'clock in the morning, and we go through to the to that night again. So we have two full days of there will be of just speakers, presenters. There will also be an incredible number of exhibitors that will be there that people can visit. We've also got several workshops going, so it's going to be a great event. And in fact, Chris, it is now recognized as the largest pro-life, pro-family convention in the country. We have over 1,000 people per day that come through the conference, and it's right here in Cleveland. So people that are listening to your program, they really should go onto our website, bringingamericabacktolife.org. Again, bringingamericabacktolife.org. is the website, and people can go there and look and see all of the different speakers. And the great thing about our event, Chris, is the fact that you don't have to, you can buy a ticket for the full day for $25, and you can look at, or you can attend all of the presentations plus the workshops for $25, which is an incredibly affordable price.
And I like that. I'm looking at your form right here. I actually downloaded it, and then you can pay if you wanted to have breakfast with you or lunch or the gala dinner. Those breakdown prices are there as well if people wanted to do a la carte, as it were, in their registration, or they could just buy the full pass for either Friday or Saturday. So it'd be $140 for a Friday pass, which would include the breakfast, lunch, and dinner and all the breakout sessions. And then, of course, Saturday would be as $140 as well. So if they wanted to do the whole convention of Friday and Saturday, how much would that be?
$280, I think it is.
Okay, we're doing the math. Yeah, it would be $280.
I think that's what it is. Yes, you're giving me the prices because I don't even ever look at the prices. I just do the organizing, and then somebody else takes care of how much it's going to cost us.
Well, it's well worth it. And like you said, yeah, you'll have a lot of vendors that are there, sponsors, and that's been a great time to work the tables and to talk and fellowship with people. We've always had a great time over the years, and you've had some wonderful guests in the past. And this year is no different, as you have Abby Johnson coming, Bobby Schindler, a whole host of folks that will be at this year's Bringing America Back to Life convention. Again, this is at the Embassy Suites in Independence. We say Cleveland, but in Independence. By the way, a wonderful facility in and of itself, and people will have a great time. It's very roomy. I actually like their decor and the way things are spaced out. And, of course, you'll just meet with a lot of wonderful people and pro-lifers from across the region, and people are coming in from other states as well. And it's great to be able to engage what people are facing and how they're reaching their culture, how they're reaching the youth of America with the pro-life message. And basically you have a lot of veterans that are coming as well that have been in the pro-life cause for some time. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, you know what, the whole idea is, and we talk about this probably, we can never say it enough times, let me say that. We say this all the time. It's what the people that we're inviting are the veterans. It's the choir. That's who we're looking to invite them in to say, come to the practice. Come and learn how to sing. So when people criticize and often say, oh, you only just talk to the people that believe the same way as you. Yes, exactly. That's exactly what we intend to do with the Bringing America Back to Life. If we ignore that piece of what we need to do, Chris, we will fail. We need to empower and enrich and educate and provide all the information that's necessary for our veterans to be able to continue on to go on with the fight. I mean, so many of them have, thought for many, okay, this is the time. We've seen the end of abortion. It's going to end. And not only has it not ended, but now we are seeing all kinds of other parts and pieces that have popped up.
Yes.
Because of this culture of life. We will be, Bobby Schindler, you mentioned Bobby Schindler is going to be there. Well, Bobby, of course, has come into the movement because of what's happened to his sister.
That's right.
Who, was starved to death. So we've got the end of life issues now, which are just horrible, absolutely horrible to see what's happening. We've just fought a very, very fierce fight here in Ohio. People don't think it's in Ohio. It's right here. It's coming back. The last legislative session, we were able to defeat the what they call a MOLST bill, which is a medical order for life-sustaining treatment, which in fact is exactly the opposite of that. It's a medical order to remove life-sustaining treatment.
Right.
So we were able to, we were able to stop that. And a lot of it is because of the education that we've done at our conventions, Chris. I know that without a doubt. People have told us that. So it's very important if you believe the way we believe, and if you are even just interested in what we're doing, come and be part of the convention.
Well, that's right. And, of course, a number of politicals I've noticed over the years stop by, and they like to engage with the folks that are there, which is important for them to see that we have strength in numbers in the pro-life community. That makes them also have boldness when it comes to casting a pro-life vote at the Ohio State House or on the federal level. They need to hear from us, ladies and gentlemen, and we need to get educated and really You know, just like in any course of study, you need to kind of take a refresher course. So maybe you've been in the pro-life movement for some time, but you need to kind of a shot in the arm. You need encouragement too, because you've maybe gotten a little bit of fatigue, or maybe you're even a little bit lulled to sleep after this last election. You say, well, we really did quite well with many pro-life legislators being voted into office. Maybe you have some confidence about President Trump that he's going to nominate conservatives to the bench. Indeed, we have that hope. We have that that encouragement that he's going to do that. We like the first nominee to the federal bench, the Supreme Court choice, Neil Gorsuch. Obviously, we can't tell all of what Mr. Gorsuch might do when he's on the bench, but he's not through the confirmation process as of yet, so there's a spiritual warfare that goes on. And I like, Molly, that you also have spiritual leaders that are coming to the conference as well, because there is a spiritual aspect to the pro-life movement, absolutely, because it is a spiritual warfare over the hearts and minds of Americans of choose life rather than death.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Actually, you know, Chris, that's an interesting thing you bring this up, because since Christmas, since the beginning of January, actually, right after Christmas, we start on our website a sign up for prayer for the convention. And every year we fill it up completely. So people from all walks of life, once we start getting the word out there and people return many years, you know, year after year to pray for us. But for every day, There are people praying. At least two people are praying for our convention right from the beginning of January on. We go all the way through to the end of the convention. During the convention, we have specific people praying for each presenter that's presenting. We also have people praying for the participants that are actually participating with us, that are there attending. We're asking God's grace on all of us that one of the things that we do. And the most important thing that we should achieve as we come out of this is that we listen for God's voice, that we do what He asks us, and that we listen to that. You know, how much is enough for today? That's all we ask of everybody. Ask yourself, through the grace of God, to listen, what is enough for today? And then do that all year until the next year when we come back and bring you some more information and teach you some more songs to sing.
Yes.
It's an ongoing thing. So I think it's amazing to see the community come together on this. It's amazing.
Well, and again, I want to congratulate you. This is your eighth year, and that's wonderful. What a great track record. It doesn't seem like it's been that long since your very first Bringing America Back to Life convention. We're talking about a wonderful event right here in our backyard in Cleveland, Ohio, actually in Independence, March 10th and 11th. And you can register for the event at bringingamericabacktolife.org. Even if you just Google Bringing America Back to Life, you'll find their website, and you can find the list of speakers, the breakout sessions, the prices both Friday and Saturday, very reasonable. Obviously, it helps for a good cause, and it's just a great time of fellowship with pro-lifers that are of the same mindset that you are, and what we need to do to win the culture over for life. You know, Molly, let's talk for a minute, because, you know, in the last number of years, we've seen the March for Life just grow in number, with many young people coming from across the country, piling off of buses that marched down Pennsylvania Avenue. And even the liberals were saying, and some of the older feminists were saying, well, look how young they are. And they were discouraged, and which is a good thing that the older feminists who are pro-abort were discouraged by tens of thousands of young people that were mobilizing for the life cause. Yet what we saw in the aftermath of the election in November and the inauguration, we saw what was called the Women's March in Washington, which was actually very distasteful, disgusting, a lot of things that took place there. Not anything you'd want to bring your child to, that's for sure. A very raucous crowd. But nevertheless, I talked to pro-life leaders. They were concerned because the Planned Parenthood proponents, those who are promoting abortion on the other side, they seem to be somewhat energized after the election. Explain to why we should have some concern about that and what we need to do.
Well, you know what? I think you need to also understand what's going on with regards to the younger crowd that appeared to be part of this women's march. We know for a fact that many of those young people were paid to go to march. So we know that that's for a fact. We know that when people go, when our young people go to the March for Life, nobody's paying them. In fact, they're paying to go. So we've got that dichotomy happening right there. But we should be concerned because, you know, we need to get a message that will resonate. And I think it is. I do think it is. But I think we've got some work to do still. The younger generation, and you know, I'm borrowing a term that's been thrown out there many times, but it's the snowflake generation, where, you know, as long as I feel good, then everything's great, and then I'll do whatever you want me to do. But as long as I feel good, that's the appeal of abortion. Let's face it, that's the appeal of euthanasia, euthanizing or signing off on an assisted suicide form for an elderly parent or grandparent. Many times it's that kind of the me first type of generation that has come through. We have a lot of work to do to defeat that. I will say, however, that when at our convention, you know, and sort of certainly you've seen at the March for Life, 1/3 of our participants are young people, and we don't beg them to come. They're champing at the bit to get there. So I think we are being able to cut through some of the noise. The problem comes when Chris and I've said this over and over and over again. The problem comes when we continue to say, okay, well, it'll be in 10 years time that we will end abortion. It'll be in 50 years time when we will stop euthanasia. No, we've got to adopt the same outlook as do the liberals and the left people that are supporting the end of life issues and abortion. We've got to say, we are going to end it. We are not going to compromise on anything.
Right.
This is going to be, and I keep saying this to everybody. I've said it over and over and over again publicly and on radio interviews and all the rest of it. I want this to be our last Bringing America Back to Life convention. I don't want to keep doing this. I've been doing it for way too long, and I want it to end. I'm done with the regulating of abortion. I want to end abortion. I'm done with the regulating and trying to put barriers up for euthanasia. If that's all we're going to try to work towards, we're going to end up with a Netherlands or a Belgian or a Denmark type of culture where anything goes. We need to get down to the nitty gritty and say no. We will hold strong. It's not good enough to just disagree. We have to actively stop some of the ideas and thinking that is going on at the current time.
Some of your keynote speakers, Abby Johnson, tell us about her testimony.
She's going to be talking about what she has been doing since she left the pro-life to the pro-abortion movement. She was a manager in an abortion center, a Planned Parenthood actually in Texas, and she is going to be talking about the fact that she's now trying to get to the workers in the abortion facilities. She has provided them, and she talks a lot about this. She's got a book out that's called And Then There Were None, and she's got an organization called And Then There Were None as well. She's going to be talking about how do you do that? How do you get to the workers? Because as a worker herself, she knows how difficult it is to actually get out of the system, because they get paid very well. It is their bread on the table for them. Many of these workers, the assistants, the administrative staff, the nurses, the doctors. So what she's trying to do is to find an alternate way to find a job, basically a job bank for these people to go into. She will be talking a lot about that. She'll be talking about her own experience and what Planned Parenthood is doing inside of these facilities. Absolutely, it'll knock your socks off. It is disgusting what's happening inside the Planned Parenthood facility. So that's what her big discussion will be about that.
Well, and we should be encouraged because we do have momentum going our way in Washington. For instance, the videos that went viral that show the inner workings of Planned Parenthood and the selling of baby body parts horrified the nation who saw this. Thankfully, because of social media, it was viewed over and over again to where Washington had to respond. Even John Boehner called for investigative hearings on Planned Parenthood, who receives $500 million a year in federal funding. Well, that's all up for the chopping block, and especially now that we're hearing about the repeal and replacement of Obamacare, this Planned Parenthood money that NARAL and Planned Parenthood push for is in Obamacare and is systemic in the Affordable Care Act. They were at the table when the negotiations were going on, making sure that they would get their pile of federal money. Well, hopefully now that that will be coming to an end. But folks, we need to press the issue. And one of the ways you can become educated in what we're going to hear on Friday and Saturday at the Bringing America Back to Life Conference. I'm on the phone with Molly Smith, who is no stranger to the airwaves here, as she also has her radio program From the Medium, and she's the director of Cleveland Right to Life. We're talking about the wonderful conference, Bringing America Back to Life, and you can Google that and register online. If you could just go to some of the sessions on Friday, there's opportunity for you to do that, or on Saturday, or both days, and there's actually group discount rates as well. Bobby Schindler is going to be with you. Obviously, we all watched as his sister was literally starved to death, and it was so frustrating. It was in Florida, and you know, the pro-life community in the nation really grieved, but it was a situation that we were just frustrated at. It really launched him into the pro-life movement. Tell us what Bobby's going to talk about at the conference.
Bobby's going to talk about should the time of our death be our decision or God's? And he really goes at this from a – Bobby is one of the most humble, godly people, I think, person that I've ever met. He is just outstanding. He's taken this tragedy that hit his family, and they do grieve. I mean, his mother, he talks about his father being dying of a broken heart because of his sister and because of all that happened. But Bobby just talks with such humility about – how he was pulled into the movement, and how he wishes that he wasn't here, but he is. And so he takes it and he uses this in a way, and he talks about it in a way that is the all I can say is come and listen to Bobby. I talk about him often. He was with us in 2012 or 11. I can't 11 or 12. I think he came and was our keynote speaker back once before. And I can tell you that his testimony, I don't often get emotional, Chris, because I can't, because of all the work we do. You can't keep, you know, bursting into tears every 5 minutes thinking about the tragedies that's happening around you. So you really have to sort of steel yourself and get through and keep focused on what is it that we're trying to achieve. Well, I can tell you that I sat listening to Bobby Schindler's presentation when he came in 2011, and without even knowing, I had tears streaming down my face listening to his testimony. So his talk is just, his presentation is just life-changing. It really is life-changing. So I really encourage everybody, bringingamericabacktolife.org is where you will be able to get tickets for the event. So please do consider coming. It's going to be an incredible event.
If you were, each year you have a different theme that you seem to have come away with, either whether it's something you're promoting a theme that year or just it came out as a wonderful message. What are you hoping to achieve at this conference? What do you hope that folks will come away with this year particularly?
You know, it's difficult to say. It's so interesting that you would say that, because at the end of every conference, people will walk up to me and they will tell me what the theme is. I have no clue because I'm so busy putting it all on. I really don't have a clue what the theme
You're excused. I've been an organizer of event too, and I know how it is. Your mind is like mush. You're not even sure if it's all going well, but I can tell you do a fantastic job, and it comes off very well.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for saying that, Chris. But, you know, I need to also mention that we have international guests coming this year as well. We do most years, but we have John Smeaton, who is the executive chairman of Society for the Protection of the Unborn Child, which is the oldest pro-life movement organization in the world. Mm. He's going to be coming from the UK. We'll have Gabriela Kube, who is the author of an incredible book called The Destruction of Freedom, and it's called The Global Sexual Revolution is what it is. And it's talking about how the whole idea of gender is destroying us as a human race. She's world renowned. Her book is a bestseller around the world. So you do not want to miss Gabriela. She's just an amazing woman. Then we've also got John Henry Weston, who is the chief editor of LifeSite News. Many of your listeners will be familiar with LifeSite.
Oh yeah, we're familiar with their work. They do great work.
Yeah, great work. There's going to be Dr. Les Rupersberger, who is the immediate past president of the Catholic Medical Association. He's going to be talking about something very, very interesting, and it's going to be the new reproductive science, fact or fiction. You know, we've got all of these wild and wonderful ways that we are now supposedly creating children and human life. And he's going to talk about that. And what are we doing? What Pandora's box are we opening?
Bringing America Back to Life Conference, and it's March 10th and 11th. And you can register online at bringingamericabacktolife.org. Molly, thanks for being my guest today. God bless you for your great work.
Welcome. Welcome. Thank you, Chris. Goodbye. Good night.
Thank you. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back on the other side. Don't go away.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all, so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
Be part of something great at the 2017 Bringing America Back to Life Convention with Cleveland Right to Life, March 10th and 11th at the Embassy Suites in Independence. Breakout sessions and workshops led by experts from around the world, along with MC comedian Robert G. Lee, will inspire you in new ways to protect life at all stages. Keynote speakers, Abby Johnson, author of Unplanned, and Bobby Schindler, president of Terry Schiavo Life and Hope Network, will leave you focused and empowered on protecting life through prayer, action, voting, and education. For more information and to get your tickets to the Bringing America Back to Life convention, go to bringingamericabacktolife.org.
And again, we hope you will take in that wonderful event. Again, that's taking place next weekend at the Embassy Suites in Independence, bringingamericabacktolife.org. Now, this Saturday at 12:30 at the 9th Street Pier, and that's the Voinovich Bicentennial Park that's right by the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. We hope that you come out. Main Street Patriots, a brand new group, will be gathering and supporting the president's agenda and what he's doing, and there'll be a number of speakers. I'll be there as well, and that's free of event open to the public, and that's this Saturday, March 4th at 12:30. It'll be about an hour or so that we'll be gathering. Come on down. We'd love to have you. Well, we've heard a lot about what is happening in northern Iraq as Iraqi forces and coalition forces are finally pushing out elements of the Islamic State Army out of Mosul, the large northern city in northern Iraq. And they've been there now since 2014 in August when they invaded northern Iraq and chased the Iraqi army out. And as we said earlier in the program, leaving the capital city of Mosul to ISIS to invade. Of course, they took the Capital Bank with something like $600 million in it at the time, which helped fund their terrorist activity. And then also there was a lot of equipment that was left that the U.S. Army left the Iraqi army, and they took the armory. And that created a lot of problems for the whole region. Well, we, on this program, as you know, over the last couple of years, we've highlighted the plight of the Christian community in that area, and that they've had to flee Mosul as ISIS announced a caliphate, either convert, pay a heavy tax, or die. And of course, the atrocities that happened to Christians, Yazidis, and other minorities under the Islamic State rule. Well, thankfully, that evil is being pushed back by coalition forces. Iraqi forces are now being able to retake parts of Mosul. We're going to talk about that, but let's listen to this audio update from Fox News.
From overseas now, Iraqi forces launching a new phase in the battle to push ISIS out of Mosul. So police and Iraqi forces now moving in to liberate the western half of Mosul with some help from U.S. Special Ops forces on the ground there. Connor Powell, live in the Middle East Bureau to watch all this. And what progress are Iraqi forces making so far, Connor?
Yeah, Bill, the Iraqi forces control the eastern part of the city. And just in the last about 48 hours or so, they've now begun to move on the western part of the city, sort of the second half of Mosul. They're backed, as you said, by U.S. airstrikes and special forces troops on the ground. And Iraqi troops are making progress into that western part of the city. But it is slow going. ISIS, over the last 4 months when this operation began, has really held out a lot longer than most people expected. And there are some signs that this part of the fight, this western part of the fight, might go even slower than the first part, that eastern part. The western part of the city, the roads are a little bit more narrow. It's a little bit harder for armored vehicles to move around. ISIS is obviously bedded down in a lot of parts of this western city. This is their grand final stand. There's also concern that the Iraqi troops have really taken a huge hit in the last 4 months or so. There's some estimates, Bill, that the frontline Iraqi troops have lost about 50% of their fighting strength just in the last few months. That's a big, hard hit. But Iraqi troops are making progress. ISIS has obviously also taken a big hit in this fight as well, Bill.
More to come. Thanks, Connor Powell. An update from Jerusalem on what's happening there.
And that was a report from Fox News about a week ago. And with me on the phone is Nathan Colasso, who is from the greater Detroit area that actually heads up a special school that helps those who are new immigrants to this country. Some of these children have actually been in refugee camps and have fallen behind on their studies. And his school helps them to get caught up and to find a new life in the United States. Nathan, welcome to the program.
Chris, happy to be back on. It's been a while.
It's been too long, my friend, and it's good to have you back on. And, of course, it's good to see the progress that's being made in northern Iraq. I know that you're in constant contact with people on the ground over there in northern Iraq. It's been some time since we've gotten a report. I had General Barbero on with us in the past, and he's a retired U.S. Army general who keeps a great interest, obviously, in the Kurdish territory. He has a relationship with the Kurds, and, of course, like many U.S. Army personnel that served in that area and saw free elections take place that were patrolling the area, obviously were saddened to see the city fall to the Islamic State, also have an interest and concern for the people of that region. What can you tell us? What's the latest of what you're hearing?
Well, I was able to listen to some of that Fox News report, and for the most part, it's fairly accurate. The western part of Mosul is currently being fought over. It's more of a desert warfare in the western part of Mosul. One of the main militias or offshoots of the Iraqi security forces is called the Hajj al-Shabi, commonly known as the PMU. For the most part, they have taken more of a leadership role in retaking Mosul. The eastern part of Mosul was retaken some time ago. Good news was that on January 19th, so just a month and a half ago, one of the largest Christian villages was liberated, which sits on the northern part of Mosul. So that was a very strategic and very important liberation. And then in addition to that, you know, the southern part has been under Iraqi security forces as well. So the western part is the last operation before what we think is going to be something that we're going to see a lot of lives lost once they start heading into the city. So that's where it stands as of now. I just recently came back from Washington. I met with Deputy Assistant Secretary Joe Pennington. He's the Das Pennington, so the deputy assistant to Iraq, and he gave us pretty much same updates. The Iraqi security forces have proven themselves to be serviceable, and not only serviceable but very brave. They've overcome a lot over the last 2.5 years. However, now the worry is that land theft and land grabbing during this time of uneasiness and travel from innocent civilians, that the land theft and land grab will start to make waves, and this is what you'll start to hear about very soon.
Okay, let's talk about then those who had to leave their homes in Mosul under the caliphate. We're talking about Iraqi Christians, Chaldean Christians that went into Kurdish territory around the Erbil area. And I did thank President Barzani personally. I was invited to a reception at the Chamber of Commerce over about a year and a half ago when he was coming to Washington to seek aid for the something like 3.5 million refugees that had come into his territory to seek refuge from the Islamic State. I thanked him for the kindness that he was showing to the Christians, Yazidis, and other minorities and the refugees, and told him what we would do as far as talking to government officials to encourage that kind of humanitarian aid that he was needing. What is the status of a lot of these refugees? How many still remain in mass camps, they would say, in the Kurdish territories? And are you in contact with them?
Right. So after the fall of Mosul, we saw a lot of our Chaldean and Assyrian Christians move into refugee camps. And for the most part, our people don't move into UNHCR camps. UNHCR, that stands for the United Nations High Commission on Refugees. They don't move into those camps because of a lot of persecution, rape, bullying that happens with other members of the camp. So our people are more familiar and more comfortable with the church camp.
Let me stop you there, because there's no policing, in other words, if the UN camps.
I mean, whether it be intended or unintended, the UN does a very bad job when it comes to our people. And
they're just not very good at anything. over the years, David, I'll tell you, the blue helmets haven't been that good. Bad. Very few successes over the years to their credit. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you're absolutely right. And so for that reason, our people go to the church camps. Now, what we did see with the UNHCR, what we pushed for over the last few years, is we wanted them to open up processing centers, refugee processing centers in Erbil and in Beirut, which is where a lot of our people are. And so last December, which was about 2 months ago, we started to see more people coming in because they had easier access to get processed. However, the main city that our people have relocated to is Ankawa, which is just outside of Erbil. And for the most part, our people are now sheltered. Are they still uprooted from their homes? They are. Are they going to go back? We don't know. But at least they're not outside.
And so we're talking about, let's see, almost 2.5 years now that they've had to leave, right?
So Mosul was in late June, and then our villages in the Nineveh Plains was in early August.
Yep.
So we're in year three. We haven't hit 3 years, but we're in year three.
Now, we this has been a saga, and we've actually chronicled it on this program. I just wish we were on more stations so people could follow us, but people are interested to hear about our discussions, whether it be the times in which Joseph Kassab, yourself, and Senator Portman have been on to talk about the plight of the Iraqi Christians that have had to flee their homeland, Syrian Christians, and enter into Kurdish territory, the complications with Turkey that were, and instead of being an ally like NATO, Mr. Trump isn't wrong about that. They were actually part of the problem. In fact, after President Barzani came to Washington to meet with President Obama and his staff, 2 weeks later, the Turks started bombing elements of the Kurdish territory. Now, they would say that they were terrorist breakoff groups that they were combating, but it got to be really a mess. There was no leadership in all of this. Very frustrating. We were trying to push for a visa processing center in Erbil, since ISIS controlled about 200 miles leading to Baghdad. I mean, that was where the embassy in Baghdad is, where they were being told to go to. You didn't have to travel through something like 200 miles of enemy-controlled territory. Who wants to do that?
Yeah. It was impossible. It was impossible. And thankfully, last January is when the visa processing center, the UNHCR processing center, was open in Erbil and in Beirut. And
what month did that take place?
Last January is when the UNHCR opened up a processing center in Erbil.
How many people have been processed through that center?
Since last January?
Yes, sir.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how many people have been processed in total, because when they first got processed, of course, everyone that gets processed wants to come to the United States. But a lot of times members have family members or people, the community members there, have family in other countries, so they request to go to those other countries.
Sure.
But we wanted to make sure that there was a processing center close to our people so that they didn't have to go through miles of warfare, you know, and avoiding warfare or circumvent warfare,
yep,
just to get to Baghdad to get processed, or to illegally cross into Turkey, which is, as you just mentioned, Turkey is becoming very troublesome. President Erdogan, is becoming someone who's gained a lot of totalitarian power, and I do not, although they are a NATO ally, I don't consider them an ally whatsoever.
I'll tell you, this wasn't an area of world history that was covered in my high school or college years, but I've been able to take a crash course, as it were, through this whole ordeal. And, of course, we have personal interests, as our son fought in Iraq and had personal interest in the people of Iraq. And he actually toured in Mosul and oversaw the elections there, the free elections after the fall of Saddam Hussein. And, of course, we could always debate, you know, the good, the bad, the ugly of, you know, the whole involvement of the U.S., well intentions, but things that broke down and didn't work. I don't think we should have pulled out entirely. I think that allowed ISIS to come in. But nevertheless, what we do going forward is so important in the negotiation, as you said, among the nations and the land grab. Now, let's talk about those who would like to return to Mosul. There are those in refugee camps in Kurdish territory once the city is retaken. Would Iraqi entities invite and welcome back their own residents, albeit what religious persuasion they might be, whether Yazidi, Christian, or Sunni Muslim?
Right, so that's where we are at now, is are Iraqi security forces going to safely relocate those who are uprooted from their homes back into their villages? However, the problem is there are many offshoots to the Iraqi security forces. And in a country so corrupt, in a country led by people, there are people in power still like Nouri al-Maliki. And these people in power still have loyalists in the military and offshoots as part of the military. And these people are responsible for many of the land thefts and home grabbing and things like that. So we're starting to get reports on the ground, especially in our villages in the Nineveh Plain.
Oh my.
That once these villages are being liberated, these offshoots, these militia offshoots, mainly offshoots that belong to Nouri al-Maliki and other corrupt politicians, they are destroying homes for the sake of not allowing or making sure these original family owners are not returning.
Do we have video or photographic evidence of this?
We have reports from the Human Rights Watch, satellite imagery showing homes being blown up What they were saying, they're responding with that they are demining the homes. However, the way that they're going about the demine, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make scientific sense. There's no reason for them to blow up the homes from the inside. Additionally, they also say that these homes are being used as defense mechanisms for ISIS. However, satellite imagery shows that the destruction of the homes occurred after they were liberated. So between some Kurdish factions of the Peshmerga and some of factions with the Iraqi security forces, mainly the PMU and other groups belonging to Nouri al-Maliki, we have a heavy concern and a lot of work to do. Human Rights Watch and other organizations on the ground are making these types of things public, these stories public. But they haven't gained traction yet. Obviously, the battle is the most important. They haven't gained traction yet, but they will. And you'll start to see them shortly. And I'll send you some information, Chris, a video that was reported on yesterday, or that was published yesterday. And I'll also send you the Human Rights Watch so that you can share that with your listeners.
I appreciate that. We're going to take a quick break. We're on the phone with Nathan Colasso. We're talking about the retake of Mosul in northern Iraq and what it might mean for those refugees that had to leave 2.5 years ago, some of them hoping to go back home. We'll have to wait and see if they can actually do that. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Be part of something great at the 2017 Bringing America Back to Life Convention with Cleveland Right to Life, March 10th and 11th at the Embassy Suites in Independence. Breakout sessions and workshops led by experts from around the world, along with MC comedian Robert G. Lee, will inspire you in new ways to protect life at all stages. Keynote speakers Abby Johnson, author of Unplanned, and Bobby Schindler, president of Terry Schiavo Life and Hope Network, will leave you focused and empowered on protecting life through prayer, action, voting, and education. For more information and to get your tickets to the Bringing America Back to Life convention, go to bringingamericabacktolife.org.
And we're back with Nathan Colasso. Nathan, let's talk about the work that you're doing in Greater Detroit, the special school that you have. Tell the folks about that.
Sure. So we have a couple locations here. We are charter school operators. And so what we specialize in, we take more of a community-based approach, knowing that these kids are coming with a lot of trauma. Mainly, you know, these are children that were born into war and among other things. So we provide services beyond what you normally see at a school. We provide behavioral health services. We're opening up actually a full-scale clinic next week. We provide translation services, a number of special services, refugee services as well. So we are now actually, Chris, since last time I spoke to you, we doubled our numbers since last year.
Wonderful.
So it's been very successful. We're looking at now maybe opening up in Chicago, where there's a very heavy Assyrian Christian population there. Same population, but from different villages, maybe. So this is where we're at, and you know, we're lucky to be in the position that we're in. It's very rewarding, and we are comfortable, and we're happy that the families have decided to give us the responsibility of raising their children. Again, these are very vulnerable children who have experienced nothing but war.
Absolutely. God bless you for what you're doing, and it's wonderful for them to come and to get integrated and to become fine U.S. citizens eventually, we hope. And how many have come actually from the affected region to your school over the last year or so?
I spoke to you about this before. They've mainly been coming from Syria. But since December, we've had dozens that have been coming from northern Iraq and Lebanon. And I believe, of course, that's probably because of the processing centers that were opened back in January.
And it takes...
Because the refugee process takes anywhere between... Some get processed right away, or not, I shouldn't say right away, but within a year. But the average is more of like two years for families to get processed and placed.
That's incredible. I mean, and I've talked to folks who have gone through that, and it is a very lengthy process. Now, of course, there was the urgency of what people had running for their lives, some of which actually lost family members at the hands of ISIS when they came into northern Iraq. Atrocities and persecution, Christian persecution, quite honestly, some of which became actual martyrs for the Lord Jesus and left and went into Kurdish territory. How are the Kurds and the folks getting along right now? What are the reports there? Is it still a very amenable situation for as best as it can be given the circumstances?
It's still pretty tense. You know, Chris, there's a long history between Kurds and the Christians of northern Iraq. Between the Semele massacre in 1933 and prior to that, Safo in 1915, I'm listing, these are genocides of our people. And because the Kurds were so close to the Ottoman Empire, there's just been a reluctancy to forgive these people for those types of crimes. So there's a heavy a lengthy history, a very bitter history. However, the people, I would say this, the people of the Kurdistan area are different than the Kurdish government and some of the people that have been in the Kurdish government for a long time.
Yeah.
And I think moving forward, our people will understand that, you know, although it's things are not as happy or ultimately, what I should say is that I believe the KRG is doing a decent job in resettling or in providing a safe haven, but they could be doing much better. I guess, the best way to put it.
And that gives us something to really pray about and pray for. And I look forward to coming and visit you in Detroit and visiting the community, and I'm looking forward to the food, I might say. You folks eat well. I love your diet.
Anytime. It's actually our Lenten season started on Monday. So if you do come, we'll go to this market and get some nice fish.
I like that.
You'll be able to pick out your own fish that they'll cook right there for you. So you let me know anytime, and of course we'll love to have you, Chris.
God bless you, my friend. Thank you for all you're doing.
God bless you. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. That's Nathan Colasso again with the Chaldean Christian Community in Greater Detroit and the wonderful school that he heads up. And as you heard, a great report. If you missed any of our program today, you want to listen back at our website at ohioca.org. Just Google Ohio Christian Alliance, and you can actually catch any archived program there as well. God bless you. Thanks for listening tonight. We'll see you next week.
You have been listening to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, President of the Ohio Christian Alliance. To learn more about the issues that matter most to you and your family, visit online at ohioca.org. That's ohioca.org. Thank you for listening. This program is sponsored by the Ohio Christian Alliance of Akron, Ohio.